Hello, welcome to episode 2 of the Structure and Interpretation of Computer Programmers podcast. Once again, a bored man has got access to a microphone and is going to use it to be wrong on the internet. And this episode, I want to talk about a word project. The details of the project itself aren't particularly important, but I think it's an interesting project to discuss because it shows the difference between programming and software engineering. So the context of the project, the inception of it, was that a PhD student was paid a small amount of money to make a web application that backs onto a database, very standard web-based database system, and they chose to do it using the LAMP stack because the university's IT department had a hosted solution for that. They found it hard. They were learning PHP alongside doing the project. You can see commented out bits of tutorial source code in the project. So they're very much an inexperienced programmer trying to do their best, but they didn't manage to finish it on time for the original expected launch date. It kind of works in some respects, but then they got a postdoctoral research position actually in a different country and left and became more or less impossible to contact and unable to complete the project. Now that's very common in academic projects where people are on short-term contracts. They move around fairly frequently. What you might call the bus factor, the number of people who have the full understanding of a project can be very low, frequently one. And if they leave, then you're left with a half-complete thing. But it's also true in the commercial sector, particularly startups. Often the first programmer they hire is going to be someone with a low salary expectation because the startup doesn't have a lot of budget. So frequently a junior programmer, or they get in a contractor who doesn't fully understand the problem domain, or some existing company has some new initiative they want to try, but everyone's busy fighting fires or doing maintenance on their existing projects, so they give it to the intern or the work experience person to do. And then when that person leaves, you've got a poorly documented, half-complete system, and you need to work out how you're going to turn that into a useful product. So, I have absolutely no problems with what this person did. They were evidently a researcher and a very junior researcher in a particular domain, with programming being a secondary interest. They tried to help out these people by building the product that they wanted, and found that they weren't able to do it within the time they had available. And then circumstances led to them moving on. But my group, so I work for a university in a research software engineering role, where effectively like sort of consultant software engineers across the whole university. We were engaged to patch this thing up and build out the changes needed for it to be fully usable, because the launch date has already passed now. So what I wanted to do really was kind of discuss the steps I took from going from this project that was not ready and not complete to the point where we could start working on it and building on what they had. Because the only thing we had access to when we started the project was we were able to log into the production server. Now luckily, this being a PHP application, that meant we had full access to the source code, because the source code is just the PHP files that are in a particular folder on this server. But there was no documentation, there was no version control, no tests, just a collection of PHP files on a server. So step one was to put it under version control. Just create a Git folder in the on the production server and put everything in Git, and then add a remote to our code host and push the stuff onto the server. So now we've got a copy of the source code, and we know that like whatever happens, we can always get back to the state it was in when we started. So anything we break from now is only really wasting our time. It's not making things worse. The next step after that was to introduce a dependency manager. Now, PHP has a thing called Composer, which is, you know, similar to CPAN or RubyGems or NPM or whatever system exists on the programming language that you're familiar with. There weren't any third-party dependencies used in this project, which is something we'll come back to later. But this means that now we've got access to an easy way to install vendor libraries, so we don't have to write all the logic ourselves, and we don't have to download files and put them in the right place on the server. We can just use the dependency manager. And so with the dependency manager in place, the next thing I did was to install PHP unit. And now I know that not only can I write tests of anything I create from now on, but I can also write characterization tests. If I don't understand how the program is working or what the behavior is in a certain situation, I have the tools at my disposal to write tests and to make sure that I can build that understanding and leave information about what I've learned for other developers. So that means I've got a system where I know that I can safely make changes and I can understand the impact of my changes. But I've still got the only place where this thing is deployed is the production server, and I'd really like to be able to use a development system. But rather than like set up a staging server or create a virtual machine with Apache 2 and ModPHP on it, I chose to use Docker because putting the application into Docker is very simple and doesn't really have any benefit. But I can then use Docker Compose in order to build a relationship between the development version of the server, of the PHP application, and a development database. So now I can configure the database to run in development mode and get a different set of data and not worry about destroying the production data. So how to do that? The production database is MariaDB, so I use MySQL dump with the no data option to get a copy of the schema, and then just create a SQL file that I put into the database initialization folder on the MySQL Docker image, so that when the database starts up, it automatically creates all of the tables with the same schema as the production database. So now I've got an empty database which has the same tables and columns and data format as the production database. But my app in Docker, my PHP, is still trying to communicate with the production database. It's only now that I make the change to the application to configure the database that it talks to. And the way I chose to do that was to use env files. So I've got a file that contains the host, user, database name, and so on for the production database, which is one that's deployed on the server, and then I've created one that I inject into the Docker container that tells it where to find the database that's running in Docker Compose. And now, after all of that work, I finally believe that I'm in a position to make changes safely, because now I can test the impact of any changes. I can write end-to-end tests using curl that will make requests to the server running in Docker that will then make changes to the database that's also running in Docker and that's connected through Docker Compose. And I can do all of this and version control my changes without affecting the production system. But, you know, it took a significant amount of work to get to that point. And these are the things that usually we'd do at the beginning of a project. Indeed, we might even have a boilerplate project on GitHub that, you know, we just clone and change some variables like the name of the application or something so that all of this stuff is set up for us at the start of a new project. But that's what comes from the experience of software engineering. These aren't things that you learn about when you learn programming. When you learn programming, you get taught how to use a programming language and decompose your problem into an algorithm that you can then translate into statements in the programming language. You don't necessarily learn about version controls or dependency managers or unit tests or configurable environments or any of these things. These are definitely like engineering ideas, not programming ideas. Now, the actual changes that I've been making to this project, the first thing I did was to introduce a database migration script so that the database in Docker always starts with the schema as it was found in production. As I said, I dumped the production schema and duplicated it into the Docker database. And then any changes I need to make, changing the values of some fields or adding new columns or adding entire tables, is done through a set of migrations. The way this works is probably fairly standard. I create a table called migration, which has a column called level, and I create a single entry in that column, which starts at zero. So the production database doesn't have this table at all, but the first thing that happens when you run the migration script is it gets set up and this level gets set to zero. Then all of the migrations are written in separate SQL files, with the name of the file being the ISO 8601 format date and time at which the script was created. The reason for doing this is that when you ask PHP for a directory's contents, it sorts the files alphabetically. So if the files are named after the date at which they were created in such a way that alphabetically ordering the dates is the same as chronologically ordering the dates, then I guarantee that each of these migrations will be encountered in order. The script finds each of these migrations and it compares the number in the migration, which is the date and time, with the migration level in the database. If the script is newer, then it runs the script and then updates the migration level to be the same as the date and time of the script. So it should only run each script once in production. In development, the database always starts from fresh, so it always runs through all of them. So I have at least got a test that all of the migrations cumulatively work and make sense. So this is all a lot of sort of preamble to the point where I actually make any changes that a customer is going to notice. And all of this stuff is about adding safety, about adding confidence in my ability to make changes that are going to be useful increments. It's all doing things to ensure that errors are either harder or in fact just easier to detect. And then when I've been actually making changes, I'm reducing the duplication in the code amongst things that I actually work on, and making sure that any changes I make are tested. But I'm not going through and doing that arbitrarily. I'm not just like refactoring the whole project. I know what changes I need to make, and I know how to reduce the duplication and, you know, increase the cohesion at the point where I need to make the changes. But doing all of that work up front would add time spent on the project without necessarily adding any value, but with potentially adding the risk that I'd change or break the behaviour during all of that work. So I was happy to do the work that gets me to the point where it is safe to make changes, but not happy to arbitrarily make changes having got to that point. The other thing that I didn't do was introduce a framework. PHP was, back when it was introduced, it was like the batteries included way to build web applications on the LAMP stack. You know, it had built-in integration with MySQL, and it had the ability to do template HTML. And so it did really sort of replace like Perl and ModCGI as the preferred way to get started with web development. But these days, that's not true. And developers and software engineers working on web applications would have a much richer set of expectations and would reach for, you know, maybe a framework like Laravel if they're working with PHP, or Ruby on Rails, or whatever equivalent in another programming language. What's interesting, and particularly given the context of this project, is that a framework would have helped massively at the start, because it would have taken away from this inexperienced developer who was trying to build the project from scratch. It would have taken away from that person a lot of the decisions that they had to make, and probably ones that they didn't even realize that they were making. It would have just got things right by default, because the design of the framework kind of leads you in certain directions. Now it would basically mean redoing the whole application from scratch to adopt a framework like Laravel. You know, I looked into it for doing the database migrations, but to do that I would have to use its data models, which means that I would have to use replace the entire data structure in the application with a Laravel data model, which means that I would then have to replace the whole database schema, which then means that I would be writing an entirely different application. So it's interesting that this person who would have benefited the most from having access to this framework probably wasn't even in a position to know that it existed or to be able to get it, because it's not part of the, you know, using the phrase again, batteries included standard library of the language, or indeed of any language. All of the popular programming languages have these additional third-party frameworks for building web applications, but don't have it built into the standard library that you get when you just download the programming language package for your operating system. This person would have been unlikely to find it, despite being the person who had derived the most help from it. And I really think that's quite an interesting situation. It makes me rethink as well the idea of the Beaches stack, which I'll put a link into the show notes for. Beaches stands for BSD, C, HTTPD, and SQLite, and it's an idea of doing a lightweight database-backed application stack using OpenBSD chroots for security, and just using the C programming language and the SQLite library for data storage. And absolutely, yes, you can do that, and you can build a very lightweight, you know, resource low web application that way, but to do so you have to know quite a lot about the way that HTTP works, about the way that databases work, about the way that you're going to map between HTTP requests and changes or accesses to the database, which you wouldn't have to do in a using a framework like Rails or Laravel. So it's probably an easy way for an expert to make a good system, but it's not a way for somebody to make a good system. And the analogy that I came up with is that this idea of like using a framework or not is a lot like using ABS brakes in a car or a motorcycle. Yes, there are some people who can stop their motorcycle faster without ABS and just as safely as they could with ABS. But actually most people can't. And what you get when you're using ABS is that everybody can stop as quickly and as safely as each other. And it brings up the vast majority of people to a level, while potentially restricting the capability for a few experts at the top end. So it kind of makes me think, well, maybe like these frameworks should just be part of the distribution. You shouldn't have to know, oh, you have to like go and use Heroku and then set up Git and then push your Git project to Heroku. Or you shouldn't need to know, right, once you've got Ruby, you then need to make sure you've got Bundler and Ruby Gems and then install Rails. Then what you need is a package that's easy for systems administrators to deploy. So IT services who gave this developer access to Apache 2 and ModPHP would find it just as easy to give them access to an environment that includes this framework, and easy for people to discover, so that as soon as they've downloaded their programming language and got their teach yourself whatever language, PHP, Ruby, whatever, it includes this is how you do a web application and all of this stuff is built in, so that they're not stuck with trying to build an entire application stack at the same time that they're trying to build their application. Anyway, that's everything for today. Thank you very much for listening. I'm always open and welcoming of feedback you have on the podcast. I'd like to hear about your experiences, about topics you'd like me to cover in future episodes, your feedback and anything you want me to address. So send me an email, graham@iamleege.com, which is graham@iamleege.com, or tweet iwaslege, which is iwaslleeg. Thank you very much for listening. Stay safe and see you next time.